Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Veterans Affairs Secretary David Shulkin was once the darling of the Trump administration, scoring key wins in his first year on the job. But in recent months, things have changed at the Washington headquarters of the VA. Shulkin has canceled his morning meetings with most staff, limiting his interactions to just a few key players. And an armed guard now stands outside his office. Questions remain about a 10-day European trip the secretary took with his wife and son, the cost of which was initially charged to the taxpayers. And the future of the agency itself is in play as Congress mulls ideas that some say could lead to privatization. Washington Post federal reporter Lisa Ryan covers the VA. She joins us now by phone. Welcome to the show. Lisa, did I pronounce your last name correctly?
Yes, it's okay. Ryan. Good. No problem.
Why is the secretary holed up in his office with an armed guard?
Well, I wouldn't say he's completely holed up in that he is, you know, going to meetings and meeting with veterans groups and testifying on Capitol Hill. But he has had an internal battle that grew pretty ugly in recent weeks with the release of an inspector general report on this trip you highlighted in your introduction that he took to Europe. He's had conflicts with these political appointees that that the White House installed last year, and some of the conflicts are over personality. Dr. Shulkin is the only Obama-era holdover in Trump's cabinet. He ran the Veterans Health Administration for about a year and a half before he joined the administration. But the conflicts also, I think, largely have to do with policy, which might seem arcane to people who are not veterans or not in government. But conservatives are very anxious to allow veterans to seek private care, health care outside VA. VA is this overwhelmed, overburdened system. It doesn't have enough medical personnel to handle the demand for care. There was a scandal 3 years ago over wait lists that were fudged for patient appointments because it took too long to get them. And now there is really a push to have veterans be able to see any doctor of their choice. But this is a very complicated change. It would be extremely costly to do this at taxpayer expense. And Dr. Shulkin has been more of a moderate on this than some people in the administration would like. So that's a lot of the source of the tension.
And when you say it would be costly, the cost of the VA care is cheaper than what we can get in the private sector.
Right. So largely, right now, veterans, who get VA care, they sign up and they see a doctor for free. If you go outside, the government would have to contract, let's say, with an HMO or, sort of do purchase care with a series of doctors. But in that case, there are co-pays that the government, i.e. Veterans Affairs, would be required to pay for each visit that a veteran would make to a private doctor. And just sort of how their insurance, the private insurance market works. And that would add up to billions of extra dollars a year that the VA, in other words, taxpayers, would be spending. And it's just a very complex thing. There's also the issue of the veterans' electronic health records, the veterans, their medical records. How would they get to these private doctors? It's not, clear that if a veteran just, as President Trump has said, give every veteran a card so that they could just use it with the doctor and give a doctor their card. Well, how do you know that the doctor is going to have the veteran's records? How do you know that the doctor can treat conditions that are unique to this population, like traumatic brain injury, PTSD? So there's a whole host of issues. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, conservatives feel that choice is really essential for veterans to be able to see doctors and get care sooner. So it's a big, big debate now in the veterans community.
And the secretary is considered kind of a moderate on all of this. It just seems like it's gotten pretty tense over there considering he's a moderate.
Yes, he has. So, when you come in as a cabinet secretary, often, you can choose your own people who you want on your team. But in this case, the White House had a lot of say over the appointees, that it brought into VA. Some were experienced people and others were not. And they sort of soon started to clash with the secretary over, this policy stuff, also over personality issues. And it kind of became this sort of perfect storm, you know, sort of this cauldron of discontent really on both sides. And then the Inspector General did this report about a month ago on this trip the Secretary took to Europe. He took his top staff. He had six members of his security detail on the trip. His wife traveled at taxpayer expense. This was clearly a business trip. He went to London. He went to Denmark to meet with veterans affairs officials to discuss mental health issues. But clearly there was business done on the trip, but in 10 days, about 6.5 of those days were spent sightseeing. And the secretary accepted a free gift from a sports promoter of tickets to a Wimbledon match, which, you know, the inspector general said was an inappropriate gift. These things were not, yeah, I mean, there were lapses, there's no question. However, I think that the lapses grew in intensity and sort of press coverage largely because his enemies at VA kind of saw an opening to try to push him out. And I think the White House was largely unaware of these issues because the White House has had other things to deal with. Mm-hmm. So that became another kind of element in the conflict where, you know, Dr. Shulkin was saying, oh, I've got authority from Chief of Staff, you know, General Kelly to fire people who are not with the program. And then we were hearing from the White House that that wasn't the case. And so it's sort of still kind of a mess over there. And the problem is just that VA has a lot of things on its plate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is really a distraction for everyone.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the Department of Veterans Affairs, the second largest agency in the United States government. My guest is Lisa Ryan. She's a Washington Post federal reporter who has been covering the news coming out of the VA. It's the second largest. It's gigantic. There's dispute over whether this talk of privatization is actually that. From what That's I've read, right. Some of the Republicans, they kind of are insulted by that. They don't really mean that. They just mean giving people choice. But can they both give everybody the choice they may want and also support this huge, huge agency?
That's right. So you hit the nail on the head. It's just become this incredible kind of hot potato, because the traditional veterans groups like the American Legion, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, you know, traditional groups that have large membership, say that, you know, you give veterans more, quote, choice to see private doctors, and you go down the road of privatizing the agency. In other words, you take resources away from the current VA system of 1,200 hospitals, you know, and medical clinics. You take away unionized jobs, and mm-hmm. this is, you know, a big threat to federal employee unions as well. Mm-hmm. Now, conservatives, in particular, a group that has gained in influence in the Trump administration called Concerned Veterans for America, they are backed by the billionaire industrialist Koch brothers from Kansas. And the Koch brothers, you know, have put a lot of money, interestingly, into veterans issues and into pushing, private care for veterans. And it's a fascinating political issue because they have a suspicion of big bureaucracies, and they are, you know, really turning their attention now to veterans' health care. So, so that side of the debate says, no, we're not interested in privatizing VA at all. We're only concerned in giving veterans more choice. And for now, you know, the legislation that is on Capitol Hill, where, you know, the Senate is now debating sort of how much, you know, we should go in this direction of choice, is largely focused on sort of who decides whether a veteran can go outside VA's system. Is it the VA's doctor or is it the veteran? And you can sort of see which side, you know, Dr. Shulkin is coming down on the side of, okay, the VA doctor decides, sure, veteran can go outside the system if he or she and their doctor decide it's best to get, you know, let's say a specialty care outside the system. Mm-hmm. But what conservatives want, who are backed by, you know, this Koch brothers group, want is they want the veteran to be able to decide. And it seems a very small policy and language issue in the legislation, but actually it's very significant and potentially far-reaching.
What is the upshot here? Are we going to see more leadership changes at the top at the VA?
I don't know the answer. I think that Dr. Shulkin, it has, you know, very much wants to stay in place for now. He's got this legislation to deal with. He's got a big electronic health records project, that the Trump administration has asked him to negotiate. That would essentially, would take like about 8 or 10 years, but it would sync up the Defense Department's records, you know, with VA's records for veterans, you know, mm-hmm. once they become veterans. I think eventually he'll leave, you know, but a lot of cabinet secretaries, it's a tough job, you know, so sometimes they only last 2 years. You know, I don't know when he'll leave. I think eventually he will.
The electronic health records issue, I read that if he goes, so goes that, that he's really the main force pushing for that, and that its future is in question if the secretary leaves. Why is that?
Right. Well, so Dr. Shulkin has been, you know, knee-deep in negotiations with this company called Cerner, which now holds the contract with the military for their records. And I think the idea is just that, you know, these are delicate negotiations that Dr. Shulkin has been engaged with. He's hired an outside firm, the MITRE Corporation, to look at, you know, how exactly the records would sync up with those of private doctors. And I think the idea is he's really been the force behind this. It's not that a new secretary couldn't do it, but it would be, you know, the project would be seriously delayed and would I think, you know, people have said kind of get off the rails. I don't know. It's also possible that Dr. Shulkin will stay and complete that project, which is really huge. And he'll leave after that. Or he may stay for another year. I think the situation is very fluid right now.
Why the armed guard?
So what I understand in talking to allies of the secretary is that he has some aides who, you know, some of the ones who don't get along with him, who have barged into his office kind of unannounced and yelled at him and, you know, taken issue with a lot of things that he's done, and that he felt that was just not appropriate. He also, he and his allies have sort of said that, you know, security wasn't as good as it should have been over the last year. And I do think, you know, that I know for a fact that he's gotten threats. So after this Inspector General report came out a month ago about his trip to Europe, there were veterans who were writing threatening emails to him, mm-hmm. You know, about the report. And, you know, veterans are very vocal, mm-hmm. and there are, you know, a lot of problems at VA and a lot of problems with delays to benefits, delays to care. It's a rough agency to run,
right?
Because it really does, not only, as you said, is it so large, but VA, you know, is one of the few federal agencies that actually gives direct service. It's like Social Security in that way, you know, the IRS. I mean, the EPA, for example, does great work protecting the environment, but they don't sort of do direct service to citizens, and VA really does that, which I think makes it all the more challenging, you know, to run. And so there have been threats, you know, and I think also every cabinet secretary has a different sort of threshold for what they want in terms of protection. Dr. Shulkin's predecessor, Bob McDonald, very much, you know, felt that he wanted to kind of rid himself of security because he felt that he wanted to be more connected to, you know, the average veteran out there. And, you know, it's just a different philosophy.
As you said, veterans are very vocal, and I'm just wondering, the yes. traditional veterans groups are not in favor of privatization, am I correct?
That's right. And of course, you know, you use that word, and it's really kind of
a delicate
word. Mm-hmm. It's a hot button, because mm-hmm. the conservatives say, no, we don't want to privatize. But yes, the traditional groups feel very threatened by this. They are, and this is, I would say, the key reason also that groups like the American Legion, which is the biggest veterans group, have cited unequivocal support for Dr. Shulkin, because they feel that if you bring someone else in there, that person is going to be much more in favor of giving veterans more access to private care, which they oppose.
What is the upshot regarding that trip and possible falsification of records to pay for that trip to Europe? Is another shoe going to drop on this?
I don't really think so. So what happened was that the Inspector General's report disclosed that Shulkin's then chief of staff, a woman named Vivica Wright Simpson, had actually falsified an email. She was emailing with an aide who was organizing things on the trip, and she, you know, the secretary had asked, you know, well, is there a way for my wife to go, you know, to be invited by one of these governments in Europe so that, you know, her expenses could be paid? And the upshot is that the then chief of staff falsified an email to sort of show, you know, that the secretary was going to get an award, which would justify her being able to go at taxpayers' expense. Long and the short of it is, very quickly, just a few days after the report came out, she was forced to retire. So there's a new chief of staff. And Dr. Shulkin has reimbursed the government for the cost of these tickets to the Wimbledon match. He's reimbursed the government for his wife's airfare and other expenses. You know, another point that the report made was that the paperwork submitted by Dr. Shulkin's staff was shoddy. It was incomplete. It was pretty bad. I don't think that's the secretary's fault. I think, you know, that's something you rely on your staff to do. I don't know what the upshot, you know, of all that paperwork is going to be. But, yeah, the paperwork was pretty bad. And, you know, the inspector general essentially said, you know, this trip probably cost about $123,000. But honestly, it could have been more. I just can't tell because the records were so bad.
Lisa Ryan, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
Lisa Ryan is Washington Post federal reporter. She's been covering the news coming out of the VA. Coming up, we're going to drill down a little bit deeper into that issue of privatization or expansion of what is known as the CHOICE program. We'll tell you all about it when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. An Inspector General report in February detailing management failures at every level in the Department of Veterans Affairs Washington, D.C. Medical Center is just the latest in a string of troubles at the massive agency. Another report from 2014 found systemic manipulation by VA officials to hide lengthy and growing wait times at its medical centers across the country. Congress responded with the CHOICE program. That was a tactic to temporarily ease the strain on the VA. Now efforts are afoot in Congress to extend and expand the program, leading some to worry about a creeping privatization of the agency. Joining us is founder and CEO of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, Paul Rykoff. Welcome to the show, Paul. Paul, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Good to be with you, man.
And also by phone is journalist and author Suzanne Gordon. Her 2017 book is titled The Battle for Veterans Healthcare, Dispatches from the Front Lines of Policymaking and Patient Care. Welcome to the show, Suzanne.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Suzanne, Veterans Affairs has typically been a bipartisan issue on Capitol Hill. Do the arguments regarding this expansion of the CHOICE program, the issue of privatization, do they fall out along partisan lines?
Actually, no, because I think there's a kind of consensus about what I would call stealth privatization and more expansion of outsourcing veterans care to the private sector, with some exceptions. And I think it's interesting that when the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Veterans Health Administration, which is really what we're fighting about, or what they're fighting about, is discussed, there's very little good news that's told about the VA in spite of countless studies that come out that are almost never reported on about the excellent care the VA delivers. And so the American public has an image of an agency that's really quite incorrect, that has some problems, but is really providing amazing care to veterans. It needs definite improvements. It for certainly needs more funding and more staffing. But the depiction of the Department of Veterans, the Veterans Health Administration, as in critical condition as the Secretary David Shulkin depicted it recently is really actually quite inaccurate. And particularly when you compare veterans' health care to the private sector, it's really, really inaccurate. And it's really important for us to think about that when we consider expansion of care to the private sector.
Paul Rykoff, what are you finding when you're on Capitol Hill? Is it Republicans and Democrats united on this issue or not?
No, not even close. I think that the honeymoon days of everyone getting along were pretty short-lived, maybe about a year. And that was last year, and maybe it was a really unique oasis of compromise and cooperation. But I think some of that was out of a need to focus on veterans, but some of it was just political opportunism. And I think the populism that veterans issues present. Look, in an election year, veterans are extremely popular. Mm-hmm. I think President Trump recognized that on the campaign trail in a way that Secretary Clinton did not. Mm-hmm. And I think recently politicians have seen that across the board. But the bigger issue at play here is twofold. One is a fight for the very soul of the VA, the construction, the architecture, the philosophy of the VA. Will it be more or less privatized? But I think separately, there's also an unfolding political factor, which is the VA has become a battleground for ideologues. If you believe that socialized medicine is the answer to everything, the VA can be a great case study. If you believe that privatization is the answer to everything, the VA can be your great case study. So you've got, you know, extreme conservative ideologues on one side, and you've got extreme liberal ideologues on the other side, and most veterans are actually in the middle. And
right.
That's where they've been caught, especially in the year.
Most veterans, most people would say, well, why can't there be a hybrid solution to this? Not all veterans are living in an equal situation in an equal place, right?
Right. It is a hybrid right now.
Right. Exactly. Right now.
Isn't parts privatized. The question is it become more privatized? And any dollar that gets spent in the private sector that wasn't going to be spent by VA is an expansion of privatization. I think there's another key component here that makes it bigger than just veterans. The VA budget is now about $200 billion. It's second really only to the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. And VA budgets have continued to increase while most other federal budgets have gone down. So there's a new
Well, for good reason,
here.
We've been in a constant war since 2001.
There's an opportunity here for business that has been increased in a way that we've never seen. So we often have started to call it the Veterans Industrial Complex. There is an opportunity here in a way we've only seen at DOD in the past that's presenting an increase in competing forces around those precious dollars, which puts veterans in the middle.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the prospects, the pros and the cons of privatizing even partially the Veterans Affairs, Department of Veterans Affairs. You just heard from Paul Rykoff. He's founder and CEO of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. Also with us, journalist and author Suzanne Gordon. Her 2017 book is titled The Battle for Veterans Healthcare, Dispatches from the Front Lines of Policymaking and Patient Care. If you have a question or comment, we'd love to hear from veterans who have participated in the VA medical system. Give us a call. Tell us what you think. Have you participated in the CHOICE program? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, the CHOICE program, without going into, you know, arcane, it permits veterans who live too far from a facility or who've had to wait too long for an appointment to go outside the VA system. The program was due to expire this summer. Lawmakers in the Senate have said that they want to use the deadline to give veterans even more flexibility. And Suzanne Gordon, that's telling you that they want to have something like the CHOICE program take over the system.
Well, there's the various bills, and there's various provisions in various bills about, there's two main bills about how it's determined whether a veteran can go out of the system and get outsourced care in the private sector. And the problem, of course, is that there's an assumption that there's all this excess capacity to take care of veterans in the private sector. There was just a study that was done by the RAND Corporation on New York State providers. New York State has 800,000 veterans. It's the fifth largest veteran population in the country. And they looked at private sector physicians, mental health providers, nurse practitioners, physician's assistants, occupational and physical therapists, and they developed 7 criteria of what would make you have the capacity and readiness to serve veterans. And they found, astonishingly, that 2% of private sector providers were ready to take care of veterans. Most knew nothing about military culture, and an astonishing 50% said they weren't interested in learning. And so the question really is, you know, if you continue to outsource more and more care and you don't do it with a referral, you know, with the VA having coordinating function, integrating function, and having some sort of criteria for when a veteran should go out of network, as it was. You know, most of us who have healthcare have to stay in some kind of network. I mm-hmm. certainly do. If you belong to Kaiser, you do. And obviously, you need to allow veterans to get outside care if they can't get care in the VA. But sometimes, you know, the waits in the private sector are worse than the VA, and we're sending them out without really assessing whether the private sector can take care of them. I mean, 55% of American counties, all of them rural, have no psychiatrist, psychologist, right. or social worker.
Well, there's a shortage overall in mental health issues, in mental health care.
Absolutely, and in primary care. Anne.
Right, right. Paul Rykoff, what about that? I mean, how do you feel about the shortage in the private system?
Oh, it's very real. And I think that cuts to the core of this discussion around quote unquote choice. And let's take a step back and understand that even the term choice has been a very concerted, developed message on behalf of the side.
Well, they do it with vouchers for schools. They call it school
exactly.
choice.
It's
euphemism for privatization. Yeah.
It's a very similar political fight that's bigger than veterans. I mean, this is in some ways the great privatization fairy tale. Like, this is a place where people want to prove a point that government doesn't work and the private sector is the answer. Now, that may be true, but it also may be a great experiment, which I think most veterans believe it is, that's not necessary to take at a time of war when we see increased demand and the shortage of mental health care. So really, this goes back to the political opportunity of who's in charge right now.
President Trump is willing
to entertain this in a way that no other president has ever been. The idea of privatization was a third rail in politics. Mm-hmm. No presidential candidate from any side would really go near this until now.
It'd be like privatizing Social Security or something like that. It's the same sort of thing. Let me ask you something. Suzanne Gordon referenced something called military culture when it came to health care. What's the significance of that, Paul?
Oh, it's toughness, right? Like, I'm tough. I can get through it. I was an infantryman, and you know, showing a sign of weakness or reaching out for help is often, you know, especially in the past, I think it's changed, especially over the last decade, you know, it's kind of been woven into our culture that you can grind through it and, you know, only the weak reach out for help. I think that's a fallacy. And I think that leaders at the point of attack, both in the military and the VA, have really worked hard to change that culture. But I think it's important to know, too, around the discussion of privatization, veterans don't support it. When we asked our members, and there are about 400,000 of them, they're extremely diverse politically, only 26% support privatization. And at the same time, the quality of care at VA is generally good. That's true. Access to care is extremely irregular. And when it comes to the choice program, we actually have polled our members over the years, and what we find is it's inconsistent. Only about 20% have actually used the choice program, and only 15% rate the program as excellent. 15% rated it as very poor. So even in the couple of years, the choice program has been extremely mixed. And you see both sides trying to really cannibalize that conversation and misrepresent the facts. No one can honestly say this has been a fantastic program that's worked really well. It's been an experiment, and it's been extremely bumpy.
And they've also, Paul, as you know, they had a big report, a memo from the Inspector General's office that the two third-party administrators have taken about $90 million off the program that could have obviously gone to care. They allowed doctors to double bill. They negotiated discounts with healthcare providers and kept the money for themselves. I mean, there's been a fair amount of fraud and abuse in the program, and it's also a lot of time and energy. I mean, I've gone to VAs all over the country, and they've taken nurses and nurse practitioners out of clinical care positions to basically track down private sector doctors who won't give them documentation and paperwork about what care they provided to the veterans but want to be paid nonetheless. So people at the VA can't integrate care.
David in Dayton, you're on the air. Hi, David.
Hi, good morning, and hi to Suzanne. I would like to plug in on the profit incentive in private care. I was a victim of medical harm at a well-known institution here in Ohio, and there were many CMS investigations that resulted of my complaints, which were all substantiated. Medical staff bylaws, governing body, staff credentialing, privileging, medical records, patient rights violations, and so forth. And my care at the VA since then has been excellent. I was offered a choice to go off out of the system for eye care with some retinal problems, and I elected to take the delay and stay with the VA system because I know my care is not driven by profit motive. It is driven by patient outcomes. And that's something that's missed in these conversations is the profit incentive. In my case, my surgeon was performing concurrent surgeries using residents, and that doesn't happen in the VA. The VA is all about patient outcomes, and that is so important to patients.
We will continue our conversation. David and Dayton, thank you so much for that call. My guests, Suzanne Gordon, journalist and author. Her 2017 book is titled The Battle for Veterans Healthcare, Dispatches from the Front Lines of Policymaking and Patient Care. Also with us, Paul Rykoff. He's founder and CEO of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7. NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the issue of privatization in the Department of Veterans Affairs. The agency dates back to the Civil War and now serves 22 million veterans. Reports in recent years have criticized the agency for wait times at its medical centers and for forcing veterans to wait months for appointments. An Inspector's General report in 2014 said that dozens may have died because they could not get treated in time. Congress responded with the CHOICE program that permits veterans to live too far from a facility or who had to wait too long for an appointment to go outside the system. The program was due to expire this summer. Lawmakers are now talking about using that deadline to give veterans more flexibility. Some say that sounds a lot like privatization. Still with us by phone, founder and CEO of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, Paul Rykoff. Also, journalist and author Suzanne Gordon. Her 2017 book is titled The Battle for Veterans Healthcare, Dispatches from the Front Lines of Policymaking and Patient Care. Give us a call if you have a question or comment. We'd like to hear from veterans today, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Paul Rykoff, what do we know about why the Trump administration's budget request proposes making funding or increasing funding for the CHOICE program, or making it permanent, I should say, at the expense of benefits for disabled veterans? Why have those two been juxtaposed in that way? Is that just a talking point, or is that an issue?
No, it's definitely an issue. I mean, this entire discussion, I think, should be most alarming to listeners who may not be connected to the VA, because it's about something much bigger. It's about outside money. It's about outside political money influencing one of the country's most important agencies. And in part, they're able to do it because most folks aren't watching. You know, this entire discussion we're having is pretty complicated from a policy standpoint, from a healthcare standpoint, and it's usually below the radar.
Right.
And so outside forces, especially now, have been able to not only circumvent Congress, but circumvent the veterans groups, the veteran service organizations like IAVA, the American Legion, the DAV. They're all in some part being steamrolled by an incredible influence of outside money, that some of it is ideological, some of it is profit-driven. But the reality is, carve-outs like this can happen when you have that kind of money when you're able to influence Congress, when you're able to run over the veteran service organizations. And that's the bigger fight at play.
Well, so when you're talking about ideological, are you talking about the Concerned Veterans of America, the Koch brothers organization?
I think they're part of that line of thinking. It may not exclusively be them, right? But I think that is definitely a group of people who are players in this space. It extends to Grover Norquist now.
Right.
People are getting into this fight from an ideological
standpoint. Anything to cut back on federal bureaucracy.
A lot of folks didn't care about veterans until recently, and the opportunity here politically after Phoenix was very different. After the Phoenix scandal, the American public kind of gave up on the VA. The middle was lost. So when you lose the middle and people say, yeah, you know what, I'm open to privatization, I'm open to the idea of quote-unquote choice, they're open to it. They may not understand the facts behind it or the fact that the reality is that choice may actually not be a choice. If you're an amputee and a female veteran with military sexual trauma who needs specialized care, you can't just roll into your local town doctor and get the kind of care you need. But it sounds good, and that's part of what's unfolding here from a very high-level political, strategic level that I think veterans are caught in the middle on.
Yeah. And, Suzanne, yeah.
Yeah, and I think also that, you know, the perception of the VA is very different from the reality in VA. And the media, particularly the mainstream media, the New York Times, CNN, USA Today, et cetera, have really fed this narrative of this broken VA, and they literally will not do stories on, on anything good about the VA. You never read these reports that come out one after another about good care, and you also never read stories about the kind of programs the VA has implemented to take care of women veterans, to deal with pain management, you know, end-of-life care, cutting down on opioids. And there's really been a terrible vilification of veterans employees. I mean, we just had a tragic incident in California where a veteran who had really severe PTSD and other problems shot three psychologists in a program that was actually not, it was more of a partnership with the VA, but one was a VA employee, was 32 years old, 6 months pregnant. And these VA employees deal with, you know, patients who are sicker, poorer, older, have more mental health problems, and we almost never, except when they die and are shot, you know, hear about the incredible work they do. And one of the tragic facts about the delays in the VA, when they exist, where they exist, is that there are 35,000 or more unfilled positions at the VA. One of the reasons is that, you know, the VA isn't allowed to offer competitive salaries with the private sector. Congress is not addressing that. And that is something that really needs to be fixed. And we're not seeing that being discussed. Well, we're just seeing some of it being discussed, but certainly not effectively addressed.
Bill in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Bill.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I spent 6 years in the Navy as a hospital corpsman from 1975 through 1981. I spent most of my time working at Bethesda Naval Hospital. And I heard many, many stories while I was there from veterans who were my patients that complained about the VA system. I mean, I heard horror stories like crazy.
Uh-huh.
I have to say, I have had absolutely no problem whatsoever with the VA system. Maybe I'm lucky. I live here in Columbus, so the Chalmers-Wiley Center is quite convenient to me. I get appropriate care at appropriate time periods. I did one time have to go out of system for some minor hand surgery that my physician suggested that I could probably get taken care of faster as a civilian under Medicare than I could through the VA because of the backlog at the Chalmers-Wiley Center. But I've been exceedingly pleased with the service that I've received. I wound up getting open heart surgery very promptly when it was necessary. and I don't see anything that needs to be changed, at least here in Columbus.
Okay.
I've been extremely satisfied.
Bill, thanks for your call.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Email from Marion. She says, I am a female Vietnam-era veteran. I am very pleased with the care I receive at the Chalmers Wiley Clinic. Not only is the medical care superb, but they offer many programs such as the Veterans Arts Council. It rocks. Email from Paul. We've been taking my 95-year-old father to the Chillicothe VA for the past couple of years. The care he's gotten there and from the nurse and other staff that do in-home visits has been superb. I know any government agency can improve their functioning, but his care has been wonderful. There is a misunderstanding that all the care given by the VA is from VA staff. Not true. They contract out a lot of services to veterans, which brings up another issue. A Politico ProPublica, this is a Facebook message from Brett, wrote a Politico ProPublica report was released yesterday that showed so-called accountability bills have gutted the VA civil service workforce, a third of whom are veterans. What do we know about that, Suzanne Gordon?
Well, that is just coming out. There's been a focus on accountability, and they passed, I know that IAVA supported it, an accountability act that was really, I think, supposed to, I was quite concerned about its effects. It has helped to deny due process to VHA employees, and I think the intention was that it focused more on senior-level staff, and the Senators Baldwin and Tammy Baldwin, who was a co-sponsor, and a number of other senators sent a letter to the VA because they've discovered that they're really targeting housekeepers and groundskeepers and transport workers and lower level employees. President Trump has boasted that he fired or removed 1,500 employees. And, you know, I think there are some bad apples in the VA like there are anywhere, mm-hmm. but the focus really shouldn't be on so much on firing as hiring. We need more staff, and we need to stop, you know, vilifying the majority and demonizing VA employees. Veterans, particularly in the Veterans Health Administration. And, you know, another thing, and I think Paul can certainly address this, is that there's a real confusion between the Veterans Health Administration and the Veterans Benefit Administration.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times when veterans complain about the VA, I'll ask them, well, what part of the VA are you talking about? Are you talking about the Health Administration, or are you talking about the Benefits Administration, which is actually has a lot of backlogs, and a part of it is the result of the fact that the Veterans Health Administration certainly does not treat all 22 million veterans, but only about 9 million, because we have a lot of complex eligibility requirements that require veterans to jump through a whole lot of hoops. I personally think every veteran who serves this country should be given health care and other benefits, but we have a big problem. It's kind of in the weeds. There's a lot of details about this. But the VBA has a lot of backlog and a lot of weights, and it's very important to figure out what exactly, which agency in the VA are they talking about when they complain about the VA.
Well, I might be able to help cut through that a little
bit. Sure, Paul Rykoff.
And you know, your team just retweeted this, but we survey our members every year. And they are a post-9/11 veteran, so they tend to be younger and they tend to be more diverse. They're about 20% women. But if you go to IAVA.org/survey, we actually ask them how satisfied they are with the VA. And there's an old adage that if you've seen one VA, you've seen one VA. So it's great to hear that people in your area are experiencing a high quality of care. Usually that's true if you've gotten through the access challenges. So again, it's a mixed bag, and there are some outstanding people, some outstanding facilities, and some outstanding care, but there have also been some real problems. And I think part of why we supported accountability is because there has been a challenge firing people who failed, especially at the highest levels of VA administration. And especially after Phoenix, our members felt like there needed to be more power for the VA secretary. And you actually saw that supported by the Obama administration's Secretary Bob McDonald, and now you see it also by Trump's Secretary Shulkin and all the Veterans Service Organizations. So there are definitely great people within the VA, but there are also some folks that need to go. And that's an important part of what the new generation wants to see, because they're not always satisfied. If you look at, for example, GI Bill, 69% are satisfied. GI Bill has come a long way. There were wait times, there were problems. Now we're sending a new generation to college. Home loans is another big part of this that is often underreported. 53% are satisfied. When you get into voc rehab, vocational rehab, only 17% are satisfied. So it is a mixed bag. It's a massive agency. And if we're going to have every veteran in America go into the VA for any kind of health care, we're going to be talking about a $1 trillion budget. Mm. I mean, right
well,
now,
that's totally not true. I mean, I think that
let me just if I can, ma'am, like only a little over half of our generation has even used the VA so far, and it's already busting at the seams. So I think if we're going to have a conversation about cost, it has to be grounded in the reality of the complexity and expense of these challenges, especially for our generation, where you know, as many as 2/3 could be struggling with mental health issues for the next 60 years. And this is going to be hard. It's going to be expensive. And that's part of the problem here is that people have underestimated the cost for too long. And that was before folks were really optimally using the VA. If everybody who could use the VA right now rolled into the VA, we'd have a whole nother span of problems.
Well, I mean, I think that there's a very high cost to taking care of people who have been really badly damaged either by military service or by conditions exacerbated by military service, whether they've been in combat or not. I think that the VA provides, provides care that is much cheaper than the private sector. Estimates were done under looking at outsourcing more and more veteran care by a federally mandated commission on care that met for several years. And they estimated that if you outsourced more care to the private sector, it could cost up to $450 billion, which is four times as much as the VA. So, I mean, I think that we have to really look at what it takes.
So doesn't that prove my point, though? I mean, then that's only a current projected demand.
It sounds right, like you guys are saying the same thing.
I think we're sort of saying the same thing, but I mean, I think that there's a cost to exposing people to the hazards of both military service.
I think we're in heated agreement on all that, but the reality is that this country hasn't paid the current costs, much less the future costs.
Right, and it needs
press
to.
Coverage does get, right, and that's I think the larger argument that's being missed in the midst of this political fight, which
exactly.
may unfold in the front page news if Secretary Shulkin is fired or resigns in the next couple of days, which is something that most veterans in America are really concerned about right now. So this is right in the crosshairs. Tillerson's out today. We don't know if Shulkin could be next. But if he is, that will be a defining moment for this entire discussion.
Absolutely. And I think we'll see, how veterans and other people mobilize. And I think Paul has mentioned, and I think it's really important to say this to your listeners, that this fight is not just about veterans. I mean, over and over again, I'm not a veteran, and I've been studying private sector healthcare for 35 years, and I look at the Veterans Health Administration as a model of what care should be when it's at its best in the private sector. And, I think we should not define this fight as just a veterans issue. That would be a tremendous mistake because it's about the future of government. It's about models of care, of how care should be delivered to everyone. I mean, I'm as I said, not a veteran, and I have two bumper stickers on my car. One says, "I love my VA," and another says, "Save our VA." These were bumper stickers that are put out by a group called Fighting for Veterans Healthcare, and I feel that it is my VA. I pay taxes for it. I owe it to veterans. I benefit from its research. Thank you for the shingles vaccine that I got. And I think we really need to think about this as a public social issue, not just a private sort of veterans issue.
Suzanne Gordon, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Suzanne Gordon, journalist and author. Her 2017 book is The Battle for Veterans Healthcare, Dispatches from the Front Lines of Policymaking and Patient Care. Also, Paul Rykoff, thanks to you as well.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Paul Rykoff, founder and CEO of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.